This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The two new cases in Borno State were discovered within days of what was supposed to be a major milestone for Nigeria, 2 years without a case of wild polio. It would have started a 12-month countdown to Nigeria and the rest of Africa being certified polio-free.
That's Chika Odua reporting from Abuja. Details coming up. Also, Nigeria's president says he will pursue talks with Boko Haram militants. And Zambia's incumbent president wins in a hotly contested and very close election. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Nigeria's health ministry is kicking off a polio vaccination campaign in the northeast after two new cases of the virus were discovered there earlier this month. But the ongoing conflict against Boko Haram may slow down response efforts. Chika Odua reports from Abuja.
The two new cases in Borno State were discovered within days of what was supposed to be a major milestone for Nigeria. 2 years without a case of wild polio. It would have started a 12-month countdown to Nigeria and the rest of Africa being certified polio-free. But instead, the battle continues. The Ministry of Health, in partnership with UNICEF and the World Health Organization, is launching an operation to vaccinate 5 million children in the Northeast, including 1 million in Borno State, which is the heart of the Boko Haram insurgency. Children in areas controlled by Boko Haram did not have access to polio vaccinations during the past 2 years. In 2013, gunmen killed 9 polio immunization workers. The attack was blamed on Boko Haram. UNICEF said the connection between the conflict and these fresh polio cases cannot be denied. Nigerian Ministry of Health media officer Olajide Oshundu told VOA the ministry is working hard to mitigate risk during this new vaccination drive.
There's nothing the Ministry of Health will do there without the knowledge and cooperation of the military. So they have already been informed. They will be part of the team that will go around to guarantee safety of the health workers.
The issue goes beyond polio response. On July 28th, just 2.5 weeks ago, unidentified assailants attacked a UN humanitarian convoy traveling from Bama to the Borno State capital, Maiduguri. The attack prompted the United Nations to temporarily suspend aid operations. Nearly 250,000 children in Borno State suffer from life-threatening malnourishment, and around 1 in 5 will die if they do not receive treatment, according to UNICEF. Doctors Without Borders has maintained a permanent presence in Borno State since 2014, working to address malnutrition and diseases like cholera and measles. Doctors Without Borders media officer Shaista Aziz says security precautions slow down work.
We're working in a volatile area. We're working in an area where there's a lot of people on the move. So security is a concern, not only for us and for our teams, but also for everybody else.
Nigeria's health ministry has not offered a timeline for the polio vaccination drive. Officials say the important thing is to get as many children as they can immunized as soon as possible. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Nigeria's president says he will pursue talks with Boko Haram militants. The talks would center on the militants' demands to release some of its fighters in exchange for the return of girls kidnapped from the Chibok school. About 300 schoolgirls were abducted in 2014. A spokesperson for President Muhammadu Buhari says his office will cautiously investigate talks, but points out such offers have been made before. Boko Haram made its proposal in a YouTube video that was seen yesterday in Abuja. One woman who saw the video confirmed the identity of her daughter, 15-year-old Dorcas Yakubu, who pleads for her life in the video. The video also shows a group of about 50 girls, some holding babies. The video's narrator says some of the kidnapped girls have died during Nigerian army airstrikes. Cameroon has been arresting or dismissing members of local self-defense militias in the north amid fears that Boko Haram may be trying to turn some of them against their communities. Local authorities tell VOA the crackdown follows an investigation by security agencies. Moki Edwin Kenzaka has more from Yaoundé.
The governor of the far north region of Cameroon told VOA there is concern that Boko Haram may be trying to infiltrate Cameroon via the local self-defense groups. Governor Mijiyawa Bakari said authorities are screening the groups.
The dispositions ont été prises pour que les mauvais grains ne s'infiltrent pas.
He says they have taken all necessary measures to remove the bad grains from the good and to stop further infiltration that may destroy all the good works that the self-defense groups have been doing. He says they are organizing self-defense groups to henceforth work in synergy with security forces and denounce suspects as soon as they get any information. Bakari did not say how many of the vigilante group members had been arrested, but local newspapers report that at least 70 have been picked up by the police in a dozen border villages and that the crackdown is still ongoing. Authorities did not offer any examples of this alleged cooperation between self-defense group members and Boko Haram, and whether it has contributed to any specific attacks. Last month, Amnesty International accused Cameroon of arbitrary arrest and human rights abuses against suspected Boko Haram supporters. Amnesty said more than 100 people have been sentenced to death since July 2015 in trials which Amnesty says were deeply unfair. The government slammed the Amnesty report as biased. Abdul Garba, a self-defense group leader in Kolofata, on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, says the insurgents are promising better conditions and deceiving some of them to work as spies.
Vous pouvez vraiment nous envoyer les denrées alimentaires et les matériels pour le travail.
He says the government should give the self-defense groups food and material to boost their morale. He says that will improve our working conditions and spur us to work as the government expects. The self-defense groups have helped the military by patrolling villages and hard-to-reach border areas, but they say this is hard, dangerous work and they need more training. Inusa Haman, a member of a self-defense group in Kolofata, says men in this group have been kidnapped and killed. He says they need special training to be able to work from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. every day. Cameroon believes the terrorist ability to organize large-scale attacks has been greatly reduced and that they are trying to replenish their ranks by recruiting vulnerable youths in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Les dispositions ont été prises pour que les mauvais grains ne s'infiltrent pas, pour gâter le bon travail qui a été fait, pour que les membres du comité de vigilance soient de bonne moralité. Il faut toujours qu'il y ait un cadre de réflexion pour amener les uns et les autres à travailler en synergie pour savoir dans quelle direction avancer. Ce que nous attendons d'eux, c'est la dénonciation, l'information pour permettre une intervention en temps réel.
Vous pouvez vraiment nous envoyer les denrées alimentaires et les matériels pour le travail. Nous allons redoubler l'effort pour travailler. Nous allons nous mobiliser, nous allons parler à tout le monde pour que tout le monde s'implique dans le travail comme il faut.
Vers 21h qu'on commence le travail, jusqu'à 4h. Parmi nous, il faut les gens qui nous donnent aussi la formation. On travaille nuit et jour.
We're sorry for the technical difficulties. Zambia's incumbent president has been declared the winner in a hotly contested and very close election. Zambia's Electoral Commission says Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party won just over 50% of the vote. He defeated his nearest challenger, wealthy businessman Kakendi Hichilema, by 200,000 votes. There were seven other candidates. Hichilema and his opposition United Party for National Development received 47% of the vote. His party claims the election was rigged and will appeal to the Constitutional Court. This is Hichilema's fifth attempt to win a presidential election. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. 16 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zambia's incumbent president wins in a hotly contested and very close election. And Nigeria is launching a polio vaccination campaign in the northeast after two new cases of the virus were discovered earlier this month. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. An Italian official warns that defeated Islamic State fighters in Libya may try to enter Europe by hiding among migrants crossing the Mediterranean. Italy is now the main entry point for migrants and refugees fleeing North Africa, primarily from Libya. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story. From Rome, she spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
There has been some debate about this in Italy now for some time with the intense fighting that we're seeing in Libya. Giacomo Stucchi, who is head of Italy's Parliamentary Commission on Secret Services, says as Libyan militias, which are of course backed by the British and the Americans, enter the city of Sirte, the escaping fighters could pose as asylum seekers and board the boats that are leaving Libya and heading to Europe across the Mediterranean. He says the scenario has completely changed and the possibility of militants escaping to Europe by sea has certainly grown. And that's a concern because Italian police have estimated that around 10% of migrants who are rescued at sea manage to enter Italy without identifying themselves, often, as we know, moving through Italy to other European countries. And if we have, as we've had this year, around 100,000 arriving in Italy, that means as many as 10,000 might have entered Europe without actually revealing who they are or giving their names to the authorities.
That's probably a frightening prospect for Italian authorities, being that Italy so far has escaped attacks by ISIS.
That is of great concern to many Italians. Many Italians still feel that they are a number one target, with places like the Vatican and the Colosseum often being mentioned in videos produced by Islamic State. But the Minister for the Interior, Angelino Alfano, very strongly defended the country's approach today at a press conference, saying that Italy is doing everything right in fighting terrorism and prevention. He says the system is working. Of course, it's working until we have an attack, and that's the fear that most people have. I think it's important also to mention that the politician who has made these claims is from the anti-immigrant Northern League. He is on a commission that is obviously very close to the secret services, the security services, But this anti-immigrant party has been feeding concern and feeding fear and is very much opposed to the stream of migrants that we've seen landing in Italy.
How strong is the anti-migrant feeling in Italy right now?
Quite divided. I think many Italians feel that they're at capacity. Certainly many of the councils across the country feel that the additional burden of housing migrants and offering social services is not being equally shared, and some parts of the country are having to deal with a lot more than others. We've still got hundreds of migrants in the border town of Ventimiglia on the border of France. I noticed today the Red Cross was serving around 600 breakfasts to migrants there. Milan has more than 3,000 and is looking at new measures to house some of the migrants in Milan. So the numbers are still very high. You know, we've had 100,000 arriving so far this year, and we're not to the end of 2016. And there are concerns about who are these people coming, where are they coming from, and are they bringing any kind of allegiances with them that could be posing a threat to Italians and their security in the future.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Turkey's foreign minister is warning that if the European Union does not give Turkey visa-free travel privileges by October, his government may no longer stop hundreds of thousands of refugees from entering Europe illegally. Mevla Cavusoglu has told the German newspaper, "We either apply all treaties at the same time or we put them all aside." The deal took effect in March and has greatly reduced the number of refugees in Turkey from trying to reach Greece. The agreement may fail as Europe grows more alarmed at a Turkish government crackdown following an attempted coup 1 month ago. One European commissioner says he does not see the EU granting Turks visa-free travel this year after the arrest of more than 35,000 alleged plotters. Tunisia has received more financial help from the United States as the African nation tries to build a stronger economy. The United States has guaranteed a $500 million loan to the country. The State Department says the loan helps Tunisia pursue important economic reforms to provide a foundation for robust and shared growth. Amy Hawthorne is Deputy Director for Research at the Project on Middle East Democracy in Washington. She spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi about the economic challenges Tunisia now faces.
Tunisia has faced a triple economic problem. First is, of course, when there's a major political upheaval and unrest, investors, foreign and domestic, pull out. And so that's what happened in Tunisia in the months after the former dictator Ben Ali was ousted because of the economic uncertainty. Secondly, terrorism. Tunisia does have an active Islamic State network inside the country. And so that has affected the economy as well by keeping tourists away. Tourism has dried up. And then third is maybe the most difficult problem, which is that although there was a lot of economic discontent under the former authoritarian regime, there isn't really a consensus now among the key political and economic actors about what kind of economy they want to have. A big segment of the Tunisian population favors a state-led economic model with a lot of government control and social protection, social support. And that is kind of against the sort of market-based reforms that the West would like to see. Some Tunisians actually want to open up the economy, but there isn't a clear economic vision, and there's a lot of risks involved in making difficult reforms. And so for that reason, economic reforms have moved very, very, very slowly, and at times it seems like they've been stuck.
Amy, in a recent nationwide survey of public opinion in Tunisia by the International Republican Institute, 76% of Tunisians describe the economic situation as either somewhat or very bad. What role do you see for the U.S. in helping Tunisia face this economic challenge?
Well, there's a variety of measures that the U.S. can take to help Tunisia economically. First is what we've already been doing a lot of, which is helping Tunisia with its immediate fiscal challenges. There's been a big drop-off in income and revenue for the state, of course, because the economy is down. Tunisia's had to borrow a lot of money in order to make ends meet. And the U.S. and Europe have provided a number of measures to help Tunisia have access to financing at very favorable terms, to help Tunisia borrow money on the international markets through a loan guarantee, for example, that the U.S. government backs up, can allow Tunisia to borrow a lot of money, and the cost to the U.S. government, U.S. taxpayers, is relatively small. And we can send signals of confidence and support to encourage private investors to come in. And we have done some of that. The third thing that I think we can do as outsiders is we can help Tunisia develop sort of the soft skills in its economy that it really needs to develop. And this is where the U.S., I believe, has a lot to offer in terms of helping small and medium businesses, helping entrepreneurship, helping improve education so that the Tunisian workforce will be very attractive and it'll become a desirable place for international investment and for Tunisian investors as well.
But is the government doing enough work to improve the economic situation?
The Tunisian government is moving slowly, very slowly, on reforms. And there's a package of reforms that the international community and the Tunisian government has been talking about for more than a year. And progress has been slow. And there's a few reasons for this. First is that Tunisia now has a democratically elected parliament and a more open media. So unlike under the dictatorship, when the former leader Ben Ali could push unpopular reforms through, now there's a popular debate and the public can weigh in and say, we don't want that change. And so it's a much more messy process. Secondly, there is a lot of concern among Tunisian leadership about social peace and about creating more unrest through implementing some of the difficult economic reforms that need to be made in terms of, for example, scaling back the government and the private sector. There's a lot of concern in Tunisia that's quite understandable that implementing a serious, robust economic reform package will lead to unrest and upheaval. And Tunisians value stability and social peace, and they don't want that.
Amy Hawthorne is Deputy Director for Research at the Project on Middle East Democracy. She spoke to VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24-7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. Shaka Sali has an exclusive interview with Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, to discuss South Sudan, recent elections, and Boko Haram. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis. We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.